In today's episode, we have Kylie Lang with us, and she is going to talk about how she uses her skills from building a seven-figure online course business to help other experts grow and scale their own online course. You will also get to hear why you should give yourself a minimum of 3 months to promote your new course, how to best utilize webinars to build an audience and sell your products, and the number one strategy for lead generation that is giving her massive results. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the Online Course Igniter podcast, where you'll hear from successful course creators and how they were able to turn their passion into a thriving online business empire. Hey everyone, thank you for checking out the show today. We have our guest Kylie Lang, who is a sales funnel strategist for course providers and has been at this game for a very long time and is going to share a lot of great strategies regarding course creation and marketing and sales. And it's just a pleasure to have you on the show today. How are you doing, Kylie?
Hello, Jeremy. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, definitely. This is going to be really cool. I know you've been doing this for, an extended period of time, and I'm sure that you've learned a lot of great tips and tricks and strategies along the way that you can share with our listeners, and I'm excited to get into that content. But before we get started, if you could just take a moment to kind of give us a little background about what you were doing before you got into creating online courses and teaching in general, and then how did you kind of transition into this role?
Sure, no problem. Okay, so my background is actually in the events industry. When I was knee-high to a grasshopper, as we say in England, I landed my first role as an events assistant with a London event company, and I went on to launch my own events business. And we did a lot of weddings in that events business. Now, this is going back like over 25 years ago, so I'm giving away my age here, but it was a long time ago. And I loved the events industry, but one thing led to another. 10 years down the line, after running my own events company, I got married and emigrated to Australia. So that kind of put the kibosh on my events company. I sold the business, moved lock, stock and barrel to Australia, and naively thought I'd take a year out. Most of your people listening, I'm sure, will be able to relate to the fact that within a month I was bored stiff and realized that I couldn't do that. So I needed to find another way of earning a living, having a business, but without having to go through building up all my contacts in the wedding industry again. And as I started to do some research, I realized that I had all this information, all this knowledge through 10 years of running my own business, and there was absolutely nothing out there in the course world to show you how to become a wedding planner. But lots of people wanted to become wedding planners. And this was where the seed of the idea began. So my company started 14 years ago, my wedding academy company, which is my digital course company. And it started at a point where everything was still being sent out snail mail. There was no digital courses at that point. So I have been on a very long journey with very steep learning curves as to how to transition from doing, you know, a postal-based course to an online course. So I've learned many, many things over the years, made huge amounts of mistakes, hopefully learned from most of them, and gone on to have a seven-figure digital course company in the wedding industry, which is still going, by the way. However, it kind of now runs like a well-oiled machine. I've got a fabulous team working there. So I, about 3.5 years ago, transitioned over into helping other people become online course creators, to help them launch, to help them understand how to get eyeballs on their new courses. Because obviously I've picked up a trick or two over 14 years. So that's kind of like the potted history version of where I've come from.
Very cool. Yeah. And we can dissect a couple of the points here before we move into some of the course creation strategies. So when you say in the beginning that it was, you know, you were using snail mail, you're using the post office for this course, what did that look like? How were you providing that course? And then, you know, how are you getting people into it?
Well, the interesting part is, and this is something I really want your listeners to walk away with, is done is always better than perfect. And start or launch before you're ready. Because when I first put this course together, as you quite rightly said, it was snail mail. And therefore, it was out of date the minute it was written. But saying that you can put a course together and actually doing it are two totally different things. Bearing in mind, I've never been a teacher and never done this before. So I started out and I wrote the first three units of the course and then kind of hit a stalemate where I thought, this just isn't going anywhere. I can't do this. So I started selling it. I had an advert in Yellow Pages, as it was back then, and I just started selling the course. And as fast as people were finishing one unit, I was writing the next unit. So I'm not necessarily saying that is the best way to go about launching the course, but it was certainly one that stopped me procrastinating. So I definitely started before I was ready, but it didn't impede me in the slightest. I would print off the course. I would go to our nearest Officeworks, as it was in Australia, stand there, shovel the information into a big, big A4 folder, and then go to Australia Post and pop it in the post and send it anywhere in the world where I'd received an enrollment from. And the interesting thing was I was getting more enrollments than I could cope with at that time because it was so unusual. Nobody was doing it. So yeah, it was a very interesting start to the journey.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love hearing these stories from guests like you because it's just neat to hear how people got into this industry. Everyone comes at it from different angles. And yeah, what you are describing is definitely something that I haven't heard of before. We'll make sure that we put the link to the Yellow Pages in the show notes for any of our younger listeners who aren't as aged and refined as Kylie and I, so they can see what that is. But no, that's really cool. I think it's a really interesting technique. And sometimes what I find, or you know, listening to other guests, is some of the old ways become new. And so some things that might be outdated might actually work today. And so who knows, maybe that strategy could work again.
Yeah, I think one of the things you have to remember is that there's no point in writing a course and having nobody on it. You kind of need to validate where you're at. So that strategy of launching before you're ready is still one that I would use today, because there is no point in sitting there spending a year writing a course when nobody actually wants to take it. You can deliver your course live and have each unit delivered on a weekly basis. I've done that before. Only 6 months ago, I did a very similar thing where everything was delivered live. I was literally making it up as I went along because it was information I knew I could talk about in my sleep. It didn't need to be pre-prepared. And that's a great way to validate your idea and make sure that there is actually an audience for this amazing course of yours.
I personally love this strategy. I think this is, you know, something that I enjoy. It's something that I teach. Is if you could, you know, create a pilot program or beta program, as they like to call it, get some students in there, and then we'll maybe dive a little deep into what you're talking about here on doing it a weekly basis. But starting with the beginning, so let's say, you know, we've talked on this podcast before, and I have information on validating your course topic. So let's say that you've chosen a topic, and this is something that you want to see if people would pay for. The main question that arises is, how do you get people to enroll into a program that hasn't been created? And how are you going to, I hate to use the word convince, but how are you going to convince someone that they should put money up front to get, you know, education from you that hasn't been made yet, and they're not sure how it's going to go? How do you handle that?
Oh, that's the same way as you handle any other type of sales. The fact that you've got no testimonials on that particular product or course is kind of irrelevant, because in this day and age, it's about audience building. It's about the emotional connection. It's about the know, like, trust factor. So if you have put in the hard work with your audience, if you've given them value ever since they became a member of your audience, it becomes like a no-brainer as long as the topic of the course aligns with a problem, a challenge that they face, and it's something that they actually want to learn. So one of the things that works really well for this particular strategy is doing some form of webinar, or I like to call them masterclasses. I don't like the word webinar, so I use masterclass. So I do a masterclass, and usually that masterclass, I will run it maybe 4 or 5 times, which is the lead up to opening the doors to my new course, whatever that might be. But the masterclass is directly aligned with the course. Now, in some cases, I will take elements of the course and use that within my masterclass. As long as it all makes sense and there's some, you know, steps like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this is how we're going to do it and lay it out. But that masterclass then shows people my expertise, the value they're going to get from me. And because they've seen me live on this masterclass, they either love me or they hate me. You know, there's no in between. You're either going to want to work with me or you're not. You're going to trust what I say or not. But that, to me, is much more powerful than any testimonial that you've shoved up on your website that could really have been written by anyone, unless, of course, it's a video testimonial. So there are many, I mean, that's the best way, but there are many, many ways that you can get people to buy into your new course without actually ever having seen it before, knowing anything about it, knowing anything about you. Ideally, you will have built up your audience, first of all, and be spending time nurturing them. So one other tip I have is if you are planning to launch a new course that's never been done before, then you want to make sure you've given yourself a minimum of a 3-month window to lead up to the launch of that course. And the reason I say a minimum of 3 months is because you need to have time to nurture them, you know, whether that's through a Facebook ad to a PDF, you know, download or a cheat sheet or a lead magnet of some description, whether it's through your podcast, whether it's, you know, through social media posts, whether it's through email marketing. It takes time to nurture that audience. But the idea is that you are constantly giving them value through that 3-month period. So then getting on a masterclass with you is a no-brainer. Once they're on the masterclass and they hear even more of your value, that question of, you've never run this course before, where are the testimonials? It becomes null and void.
Yes, definitely does. And this is an amazing strategy. And I want to ask a couple follow-up questions on this. And it sounds like you're saying that you should be building the audience first. And you talked earlier about making mistakes along the way, which we all do. And this is a mistake I've made and a lot of course creators make because, you know, we're experts in our thing and we want to go teach that thing. So we go and we spend all these months making it and then we go try to find the audience. I've learned now that that's the backwards way of doing it. So do you agree that it's important to start building that audience immediately so that you can start getting that following so that when you go to create a course or a beta program, you have those people already interested?
Oh, absolutely. Always, always, always be audience building. That should be something you do from the minute you have an idea about something. You should be building your audience and nurturing them. You know, as you quite rightly said, there is no point in spending all that time in creating an amazing course if nobody knows about it, you've got nobody to sell it to, and you don't have an audience. So that is kind of the crucial point. And at the same time as you're building your audience, what's going to happen is you're going to get all these amazing nuggets of information back from them. Because as you're building your audience, you're going to be asking them questions in your emails, on your social media posts. You're going to be asking for their opinions about different things. You're going to be asking them to comment on things. You might do a poll on your Instagram stories. All of these things give you information about what it is your audience actually wants. What are they really struggling with? So that you can tailor the information that you're putting together in your course to make sure it is hitting those points. Because one big mistake I made right at the beginning of my online course journey was I pitched my content too high. And I made the big mistake of thinking that my audience knew and had a basic knowledge of wedding planning. They didn't. Why should they? That's why they were coming to me. So I had to really rethink a lot of my course material after I'd been running it for a year or so and almost dumb it down a bit, not because my audience was stupid, but because I'd assumed that they had a level of understanding, which they don't because they were brand new. So this type of thing comes from actually having your course out there, not holding yourself back till everything is perfect, because you can't know this stuff until you put it out there. that's the key. You're always going to be, excuse the pun, doing a course correct. It is just what you do. You know, nothing's perfect out the gate. And that was a big lesson that I learned, was that I need to make sure that I don't pitch things at a level where people are left scratching their heads thinking, I don't get what she's saying. Because in the same way as you work hard to get students, you work just as hard to keep them. And then you work even harder to make them become your brand advocates, those people that just talk about you all the time and think you're wonderful, because that's where your next load of students will come from.
Right, right. Okay, cool. And so you're building this audience and you're increasing them, you're providing value for them. And then you said you want to create like a webinar or a masterclass, which is a great way to kind of people to get people in your email list or to grow that know, like, and trust value for you. How are you getting people into that webinar? And then what does your webinar strategy look like? For instance, like, what topic do you decide to talk about? How do you structure your webinar? And what comes at the end of the webinar? Are you going straight to pitching a product, or what does your webinar strategy look like?
Okay, so this is a two-pronged attack. So whenever you put together any type of webinar, obviously you're going to go to your warm audience first of all. So there is an email marketing strategy for your webinar to get those that are existing in your audience to sign up for your webinar. That is one part. The second part, without a shadow of a doubt, is you do need to run ads to your webinar. Facebook ads, Instagram ads. We've been playing with Google ads recently as well, which have done quite well. But you have to have a strategy for that, because you want traffic coming in. And people love things that are free. If it's a free masterclass or a free webinar, as long as it's hitting on a topic that resonates, it's all about finding what it is that is the pain point of your audience, which is exactly the same for, you know, any lead magnet that you create, and a webinar is a lead magnet. So when it comes to understanding what that topic might be, then one of the best places to start is in your FAQs. What are the frequently asked questions that you get? Look in your inbox and do a mine sweep of that inbox and see what are the questions you're getting from clients or potential clients all of the time. What do people ask you in your Facebook group? You know, what are other people in a similar field to you? What are their audience asking them? It's those topics that come up time and time again, because you want to make sure that whatever it is that you're doing a webinar or a masterclass on, that your audience are going to completely 100% want to attend it, because that is something that they're stuck on. It's something that they're willing to give up an hour of their time for. So once you've done that, the other thing that you need to remember with any type of webinar is only ever try to solve one problem. Don't try to solve five problems on a webinar, because you will lose people. You don't need to fix the world with your webinar. You just need to provide value on one thing that gives them a quick win at the end of that webinar. So you asked me about the structure of a webinar. I generally break my webinars down into three parts. So my first part is the intro. Who am I? Why should they listen to me? And what are they going to get out of this? So that's always the first part of my webinar. And I try to make it as interactive as possible. So during this part of the webinar, I would ask between one to two questions to get them using that chat box, to get them interacting with me. And it's quite inspirational at this point as well, because you want them to feel like they're part of something amazing. Then the second part of your webinar is the meat. It's the content, it's the value, it's the bit where people are just absolutely zoned in on what you're talking about and they can't get enough of it. And then the third part is absolutely the pitch. And I usually tell people at the beginning of the webinar that I'm going to give them a lot of value, they're going to get a freebie at the end of it, but I'm also going to tell them about my new program, which I'm excited to share with them, so I will be pitching them at the end of it. And if I do that, normally people are quite happy to listen to the pitch. Now, when it comes to signups, Generally speaking, your lowest number of signups on a course will always be the live ones. You don't get lots of people signing up live unless you've got a strategy there, such as a fast action live bonus that you're going to give people for signing up whilst you're live. Most of your signups will come in that first 48 hours or that last 24 hours, because you've always got your deadline dancers who like to leave everything to the last minute. But that's sort of a very condensed version of what a webinar strategy looks like.
Awesome. Yeah, that is absolutely wonderful. I think you gave a lot of great, great information there. So when you are talking about, say the deadlines, the 48 hours and the 24 hours, are you creating this webinar live and then recording it and then showing it multiple times throughout the launch sequence?
Okay. So whenever you put a webinar together, it never goes perfectly for the first five or six times. Either it might be too long, or there was information in there that didn't really resonate with the audience, or, you know, something just didn't work properly. So putting a webinar together for the first time, it takes possibly 6 to 8 times before you get to the point where, you know, you're happy with it. You know that it could be a recorded version. Whenever I'm running a webinar launch, I always do them live. So I might, on one webinar launch, run it at 5 different times across 3 days, and they'll all be live. So it's tiring. It's an investment of your time, your energy, etc. But you need to run your webinar live, first of all, at least, like I say, 6 to 8 times before you can think about putting it onto an evergreen format. And an evergreen format is exactly what you said, pre-recorded, where people can pick the time that they want to watch it, but it's not live and you don't try and sell it as live. However, with a live webinar, there is always what we call the replay version. What you're aiming for is a good 40 to 45% live show up rate. And I have many strategies to help people show up live, but there's always going to be at least 50% that won't show up live. The standard rate is about 25%. We get between 48 to 52% showing up live for hours. But like I say, there are quite a few strategies you can use. So we always have a replay page. So on our website, there are 3 specific pages for a webinar. There's the registration page, which is simply /masterclass. There's the replay page, which is /masterclass replay. And then there's the join page. So we make it really, really easy for people to be able to join the course just by adding join at the end of the URL. If they want to go and watch the replay, they can watch the replay in their own time. But there is a timer on that replay page, which shows that within 10 days or 7 days, whatever we decide, that replay will come down, it will disappear, and it will no longer be available for you to watch. So there is a big difference between doing live webinars and doing evergreen webinars. But you have to have polished your live version, first of all, before you can then do a pre-recorded evergreen version. And it takes time. I've written many, many different webinar presentations, and it never fails to amaze me. Even though I've written it, I think, you know, I'm a dab hand at presenting webinars now. Every time, it never goes right that first, second, third, fourth time even for me. You know, it will be about the fifth time when I go, okay, finally, I've nailed it. I can do this now. So yeah, that's just something you have to get to grips with.
Are you struggling to create your first online course? Do you have an idea for a course topic, but don't know how to get started? It can be hard trying to figure out everything that goes into course creation. How do you outline your course? How do you set up the technology to create the content? How do you publish it so that you can begin helping others and making money immediately? We know it can be difficult for first-time course creators. That is why we have designed the Start Your First Course Challenge. Our goal is to help you get that online course published within a couple of weeks. That means that you can get your digital product to market without wasting a bunch of time. We will show you how with the easiest methods possible that we have learned and crafted over the years. You'll learn how to choose a topic, outline your course, script what you want to say, and then record the material. After that, you'll discover how to set up the platform and publish it, all with a simple system that's guaranteed to get you results fast. Beat your procrastination by taking action today. Go to startyourfirstcourse.com now to sign up. That's startyourfirstcourse.com. See you in the challenge. Let's change direction a little bit. So we talked about webinars, building your audience. Webinars are a great way to build your audience, collect your contacts, your emails, and so forth. And then another great way to pitch your course. Is there any other methods that are working very well for you right now as far as growing your subscribers, your contacts, or your leads?
Oh, definitely. And as you said, you know, building your audience is such a key part of this. And yes, you should be starting to build your audience immediately. Don't hold yourself back on that. So how do you build your audience? Well, one of the biggest and quickest ways to do that is to create a lead magnet. Now, lead magnets come in many shapes and sizes. And as I said, a webinar is a form of lead magnet. But one lead magnet that has been converting like crazy for us is our quiz. And quizzes, I can't remember which publication it was in, but quizzes have been basically put out there as the lead magnet that's going viral in 2021. And we're not talking about, you know, those BuzzFeed type quizzes where, you know, what Harry Potter house would you be in, or what type of cocktail are you? We're not talking about those sorts of quizzes. We're talking about personality quizzes that allow you to find out information about your audience and then segment them so that you can really send them targeted marketing messages. So you will create a quiz that has between 8 to 10 questions, and at least 3 of those questions will give them a certain outcome. So normally your outcomes, you would have 3 or 4 different outcomes in your quiz. And these outcomes are based on the types of people you know in your audience, because most people, you know, whatever type of course creator you are, within your audience, you will have different types of personalities. And these different types of personalities have different fears. They need to be sold to in a slightly different way. And a quiz is the only lead magnet that allows you to find out that information. And the other exciting part about this is it is also the cheapest lead magnet to run ads to. So I will tell you right now, on the quiz we have for the Wedding Academy, we are currently sitting at 10 cents a lead, which is really low. So it is a huge traffic generator. It gives you unbelievable marketing information, and it allows you to segment your audience. So it's without a doubt one of the best lead magnets. And I think also because people love taking quizzes, you know, who doesn't? We've all taken a quiz before now, you know, how do I get my boyfriend to take attention, you know, pay me attention, or whatever quiz it might be. We love them because they're engaging and they're quick. They don't require a lot from us to answer them. But if they're done in the right way, then quizzes can be quite thought-provoking and manipulative, because with the questions you ask, you can start to get your audience to think in a certain way. So for example, I have a quiz for people that are looking for sales funnels for their business. And my quiz has 10 questions. The first couple of questions are quite, you know, easy. We, you know, ease them into it. Then there's 3 questions that really start to get to the meat of what their problem is. And then the last couple of questions that I have on mine also get them, imagine if you had a sales funnel that brought in leads on autopilot, how would that make you feel? So what that question is doing is it's getting them to start thinking about, oh my God, that would be amazing. I want to get a sales funnel. So can you see how that little bit of manipulation in there, they don't see it when they're taking the quiz, but I'm starting to get them around the idea of doing what it is I want them to do. Plus, the information is good for me to use as well, because that sort of language can be used elsewhere in my email marketing. But I will tell you this about quizzes. They are the hardest lead magnet to put together because they take the longest amount of time. The results that you have to put together, the results pages, the email nurture campaign that goes with it, plus creating the actual questions themselves, you have to be willing to invest the time to do it. But when you do, it really is, it's a game changer. So yes, that would be my biggest tip for generating an audience and getting leads in, would be to have a really well-designed, thought-provoking quiz.
This is awesome. This is really cool. So it's doing so many things, right? Like one, like you said, people love taking quizzes. So the person taking it, you know, you get excited. Ooh, I'm going to find out more about myself. It's like, you already know about yourself, but you still love taking them, right?
Of course
like,
we do.
I take the Myers-Briggs test like twice a year, and it's always for 20 years I'm still an INTJ. I know this, but still, you know, it's like, oh, I'm gonna take it again and see if I get a different result, you know. So that's cool. The person gets excited. Two, like you said, you can segment that audience. So as it goes through your email autoresponder software, you can tag them based on where they're at. Is this a beginner? Yes. Is this someone who doesn't know about sales funnels? Is this someone who's already using sales funnels and they need help with some aspect of it? So that's really cool. And then I think it's really neat because I'm assuming through these quizzes, you're able to save the data so you can review the answers and kind of see where the majority of people are answering the questions. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. So the two tools I use for this, and everybody uses different tools, but for me, these are my go-to tools. I use Interact to create my quiz, and then I have that play very nicely with ActiveCampaign because there's a direct integration between the two. And you can choose. You don't have to have all of the answers because you always, with a quiz, you always want to have a few fun ones in there as well to keep them interested. They can't all be serious. Otherwise, people will be like, I don't want to do this. This isn't any fun. So, you know, I always suggest if you can refer to some kind of like pop culture in some way, you know, things like, you know, which celebrity couple would you be? And, you know, things like that. So you are going to have a couple of fun ones in there that really aren't going to give you great data. So you might not necessarily want to map those into your CRM. So you can choose with Interact, an ActiveCampaign, which ones you want to put in there, and you can plug that data in. And what gets even better is you can actually give each one of those a little code. So when you're doing your email marketing, you don't have to create, let's say you've got four different quiz results. You don't have to create four different emails to go to four different types of people. You can create one email and use those codes, which will pull the information from Interact, from ActiveCampaign into your email. So let's say one of the quiz results was, you're a Beyonce. Well, it would automatically put that in using the code. So you can say your quiz results are, and then you've put quiz code in there and it will pull in all that data for you. So there's lots of amazing things you can do to automate the whole process. This doesn't have to be something that is hugely complicated because there's many, many things out there that are very, very clever and all play quite nicely together. But that information, if you've got a team, for example, let's say you have a VA or you have a salesperson, they can go into your CRM and they can find that information for themselves. They can pull up a profile and say, oh, so when she took the quiz, her quiz results said that she was a Beyonce. Great, I know that. She's also really interested in finding out more about her ideal audience, you know, or whatever the questions were. You can get all of that great information and use it in a sales call. Throw it back at them. One of the biggest things I learned is understanding that how I describe something is very different to how my audience describe it. So using their language back at them is always really, really powerful as well.
I guess when you're doing these personality quizzes, you're always giving them a multiple choice, but do you ever leave a text box for them to input any information that they're thinking on their end?
Yes, you can certainly do that, although it's not as easy then to get that information across. I usually leave that type of thing for the emails. So, for example, one of my biggest things, and this is something that has worked really well for me, the PS in an email is something that people seem to respond to really well. I don't know if it's because people often scan to the bottom of an email, but I often will put PS, hit reply and tell me your quiz results, or hit reply and tell me the biggest thing holding you back from launching your sales funnel, or whatever it might be. That's when I get those people that are really warm, interested in what I'm doing. They're the people that I want to connect with. They're the people that I want to have the conversation with. And apart from anything else, when you do that and you get people responding to your emails like that, it tells your email provider that your domain is a higher authority. You get more open rates, you get more higher deliverability, et cetera, et cetera. So that's another reason for wanting people hit reply to your emails. But I tend to leave it there. That's usually where I look for that sort of language rather than having it within the quiz, because it's a lot harder to map that data.
Oh, that's really cool. You're definitely speaking a lot of great things here. People are going to have to go back and listen to this a couple times to pick up all the knowledge that you're dropping, because you're saying a lot of really, really, really cool things. You know, replying to emails is huge when it comes to open rates. And so, yeah, this is really neat. One final question I had about the quiz, though, is what are some examples of some outcomes that you have? So I know you mentioned personality quizzes. So my question is, the outcomes that people receive after they finish the quiz, is it always some type of personality, like, you know, what Game of Thrones character are you, or what Marvel superhero character are you? Is it something like that? Or do you ever give them options to continue down the funnel? Because I thought about doing quizzes before, and I thought to myself, maybe the outcomes could be, okay, you're a beginner, here is a masterclass for this, or you're intermediate, and here's a masterclass for this. So what are some examples of outcomes that you see working well, or how do you structure those?
Okay, so this can go in two different ways, and it really depends on what it is that you're offering at the end of the day. So for the Wedding Academy, our outcome is based on the different courses that we've got. So for example, we have a course for becoming a wedding planner, one for becoming a floral designer, and one for becoming a wedding stylist. So based on their quiz results, we tell them they'd either make a perfect planner, an amazing stylist, or a floral designer. And you're absolutely right. We then very much target them with information, for example, about floral design, not just the course, but, you know, tidbits on things they can do to get started as a floral designer, because we know that from what they've told us, they are much more interested in floral design than they are in wedding planning. So that's an example there. However, there are other quizzes, such as the one that I have, where I'm telling you the personality type that you are. So for example, are you a creative? Are you somebody that is confident? Are you, you know, so there's different ways that you can do that. But whatever you do with your quiz results, you can't leave them feeling like they're a failure, because quite often people will jump on the fact that, oh, well, let's say you're a procrastinator. Let's say that was a quiz result. Well, procrastination can be quite a bad thing in some ways, because it holds you back. It stops you from wanting to move forward. But you can never focus on the negative. You always have to try and find the positives within their results. But the results page is actually one of the hardest things to do, because you have to lead them through a journey on that results page that poses you as the solution to the problem that they've got without leaving them feeling negative. So that it's not an easy thing to do. And by the way, with a quiz, you always start with the results first. You never start with the questions. You start from the end and work your way back to the front again. So you can't put your questions together if you don't know what your results are going to be. So it really is dependent upon what it is that you're selling. Like I say, because we have three or four different courses at the Academy, it makes sense for our results to tell them which one they're more likely to be, planner, stylist, or floral designer. However, with my audience, it's very different. What we're trying to find is their fab factor that we're going to inject into their sales funnel to make them stand out. So that's a whole different ballgame. That's telling them whether or not they are somebody that is creative, somebody that exudes confidence, et cetera, et cetera. There's four different results.
You know, I was trying to think to myself, if someone's, you know, starting out or is brand new and they want to try this quiz idea, maybe they don't even have a course yet, or they don't have products and multiple lead magnets, what kind of outcomes could you provide them? So when you provide these outcomes, it could just be text and saying, you're a creative person, this is kind of your personality type, no links, no follow through with that. But now you've captured that information on the back end. So as you begin emailing them and sending them information, you're targeting them. Well, this person's a creative. Let me hit that aspect of the marketing for them.
Absolutely. You don't have to have your course finished in order to be running a quiz and getting leads. Absolutely not. It might be that what you do is you take them to some resources that you've created. Maybe you've written three blog posts that would be perfect for that personality type. So that's what you send them to. And absolutely, yes, you're following up with emails. And there should always be between 5 to 6 emails in your nurture campaign for a quiz. And there's some set structures that we use to make sure that we're, you know, taking that lead on a journey. But your results page doesn't have to provide the solution straight away. In fact, on that results page, you shouldn't really be wanting them to click away to book a call with you because they're not ready at that stage. All they've done is taken a quiz. What you're doing is positioning yourself as the expert, giving value, giving advice. I always suggest to people that if they can, put a video on that results page. It doesn't have to be very long, but having a video where somebody can connect with you, your face, your voice, it's so powerful. I think my video on my results page is only about 90 seconds long, but it's people view it all the time. It works really well because it builds that connection. But as you go down the results page, I'm telling you the different things you can do to help you overcome whatever problem it is that you need help with. But I'm not actually asking you to do anything else other than read a couple of blog posts. That's it. And then I tell them to go and check their email for a much bigger results. I've actually developed like a little workbook thing with the results for them to do if they want to. So that takes them to the next stage. If they're ready to do something like that, then they are starting to get much, much closer to wanting to work with me. But at the point someone's taken a quiz, they're still a very lukewarm lead. They're not ready to jump on a call with you yet. They're not ready to take that next step with you yet. That's when your email marketing comes in. Maybe your call to action on your results page is simply to get them to follow you on Instagram. You know, if you're a big Instagrammer and you know, produce content on there, or if you have a Facebook group, get them in there. If you're not ready to launch your course yet, then you're going to have other forms of connection points that people can have with you. Like I say, it could be a YouTube channel, it could be Instagram, it could be a Facebook group. It might just be check your inbox. I've got something special for you in my inbox or in your inbox. So it doesn't have to lead to a sale. You don't need to be ready with your course just yet. This is about nurturing. It's about audience building, emotional connection, no like, trust. That's what this is about. That's when you're to go to that next level. If you're launching a course, you know, that is when your masterclass comes into play. And if you're doing one-to-one coaching, that type of thing, then yeah, you'd want to get them on a discovery call. But again, that's not going to happen until you've built that connection with them. And your quiz is just that first point. But if you're delivering a lot of value on those results pages, then you're doing a really good job at starting off building that know, like, trust factor with them. And usually within your first email, you'll also refer back to that results page so that they've always got a way to get back to it if they want to look at it again.
Very cool. I love this. This has been great. Thank you so much for all of your knowledge today. I know personally, I've been taking a bunch of notes here in my notebook. I'm going to go back and listen to this episode multiple times and just kind of go through all the different pieces here because I think it's been wonderful. So thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. And if anyone wants to find out more about you and what you got going online and how you might be able to help them in their course creation journey, where can they go to do that?
Very simply, just go to kylielang.com. And if you would like to take my quiz and see what it's all about, it's kylielang.com/quiz. So really simple, really easy. And if you want help launching your course, if you want help putting a masterclass or webinar together or sales funnel, that is exactly what I do.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for that. I'll make sure that I link all those up in the show notes so people have easy access to go click on those links and get to you. Don't be surprised if you see me pop up in your email inbox myself after taking the quiz to see what I am. And yeah, it's been wonderful. Thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. I know the audience is going to love this. And I just look forward to your continued success in the future.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Jeremy. It's been a blast talking to you, and I just love talking about this type of stuff. So, yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Kylie. You can find out more about her and her business by visiting kylielang.com, or you can get the show notes of this episode along with links and resources by visiting onlinecourseigniter.com/60. I look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you for tuning in to the Online Course Igniter podcast. Make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening so that you don't miss an episode. If you would like to learn more marketing strategies and how to sell your online course, then also check out our free community where we share tips, tricks, and tutorials at onlinecourseigniter.com/community.